Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Ross Ferguson. How are you, brother?
We are good.
You're going on a road trip, you said.
Yeah, just before we go into that, just did the exact same thing that my wife tells me of every time about this podcast. You ask me, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And I always respond with, we. And my wife always points out that I always respond from a family perspective.
It's because you're a family man. You're a good family man.
But I feel bad saying, I am amazing. I feel good. I don't know.
Well, you feel bad.
Like, I don't know.
You could say that. I wouldn't think anything of it.
No.
I wouldn't think you're a narcissist or anything like that.
No. Well, anyway, I just did
not
it.
For that reason, but.
Okay, appreciate that. And respond to your question. Yes, we are hoping to go on a road trip again this summer. So when we move.
You guys do this a lot.
Yeah.
You're a driving man.
Number one, flights are just really expensive when you add in five. If one of you are going, fine. But when you're a family of five, like, it just gets really expensive. So every time we've looked at doing a trip, it's just cheaper to drive. But since we've been here, we have road tripped up to North Dakota, and I think we did like five states as we went up. We have done the Smoky Mountains, so we went all the way across to Tennessee, and I think we did three or four states as we went through that. We, in a previous trip, have road tripped down to Dallas from Missouri. Last summer, we went to Colorado and did the four national parks of Colorado. So we're trying to take off as many states and as many national parks as possible while we're here. So we know we're here for a couple more years, and then, you know, the Lord will wherever we go after that. So we're just using it as a time to road trip. And we've been wonderfully blessed. Lots of people have kind of blessed us to be able to do these road trips. But this summer, we're in a slight debate as to where to go.
Okay.
So we can either go down to New Mexico and see the national parks in New Mexico, which when we looked them up was similar to the southern national parks of Colorado, as in a little bit more deserty, sandy. Or at a longer drive, we could go up to Yellowstone National Park and drive that. That would be about 16 hours there, 16 hours back.
Wow. Okay.
So it's about 3,000 miles total to do that. So we I think we're probably going to go to Yellowstone. I think that's probably where we're going to end up. But once we've done like those two road trips, so whatever we don't do this year, we'll probably do next summer. And then the only other places we haven't been really from Missouri is up towards kind of Chicago area. We kind of said that we could do like a weekend road trip there. But after that, we're pushing 20-hour drives to get somewhere. So like I would say we have driven to every state within a 15-hour drive off Missouri.
Crazy.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Which we love. We love doing it. But
I lived in New Mexico for 3 years when I was a kid.
It seems hot and deserty.
In Albuquerque.
Yeah, that's roughly where we were going.
We were kind of at the base of the Sandia Mountains. I can't say that I enjoyed it, but my experience is probably colored by the fact that it was like 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, which is just like the worst time in anyone's life. So I was in sort of like my own personal purgatory of adolescence.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. But I'm not a big desert guy. I don't really like the desert.
When we went to Colorado last summer, we really enjoyed Rocky Mountains and Black Canyon, which is the northern national parks. And then as we went south, it was the Great Sand Dunes and Mesa Verde. And both of those were more kind of sandy, deserty. And we didn't enjoy them as much. I think we enjoy more the kind of mountainous. I loved going to see Smoky Mountains, Tennessee. That was just right up my street in terms of what we enjoyed seeing. But yeah, road trips are my big thing. Now, I know road trips are not a big thing for you.
No.
So when you travel, what's your big thing? Like if you were to do it. You've been on cruises, haven't you? You've done cruises?
Yeah, just two.
Two,
Yeah. Not a big. We've talked about doing another one, just two. We've never been on a cruise, just the two of us.
Okay.
We went both times. Was with big extended family.
Yeah.
And it was fun. We like when we did it, we thought, oh, we should do this again. Just you and me. That would be fun. Yeah. But we've just never done it.
We can't do it because Miriam gets travel sick.
Oh,
so
okay.
The road trips here are much easier because roads are fairly straight. So she hasn't had much travel sickness here. But even just looking at a boat will make Miriam feel travel sick.
Oh,
looking at the sea, like if we go to a coast and someone's got a little dinghy out there, just seeing the dinghy going up and down will make her feel really sick.
Really?
Yeah. So, and frankly, I don't really want to be in a boat That would make me claustrophobic.
You said you'd end a desert, mountains, you know, forest, that sort of thing. What about like waterfront?
Oh.
Could you get to like Lake Michigan? Because there's like resorty areas and camping areas and things around
so,
there.
So number one, after last year's experience of camping, that is probably not high on my
so
list
not
to
camping,
do again.
Okay. There's hotels.
Well, yeah. So Airbnb. I like Airbnbs.
Okay.
Cheap Airbnbs.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that like books the ones in the really dodgy areas.
Yeah.
And you kind of lock the door and it's beautiful inside. Just don't look outside. So somebody said we should drive all the way to the southern beaches. And I think the closest was maybe 14, 15 hours if we did that. But yeah, we were thinking maybe Chicago and round the lake up there. We were thinking about maybe doing that. But yeah, I like driving. I could drive for hours. It doesn't bug me. And the only time it bugs me is when we're listening to one of the kids' audiobooks. we listened to A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh yeah.
Man, we were driving through Kansas in the area where there nothing happened, straight road for hours, didn't see a single car, a single human being for 2 hours, listening to The Wrinkle in Time. It's the first and only time I've pulled over and just said, I am done. We're taking a break.
Was it the book or the narrator?
Both.
Okay.
One, it was a very breathy voice. And you're just like, speak in a normal voice.
Yeah, and also
the book. I don't like kind of concept books. I like to know what is going on in the book.
This is going to be fun when we get to in the writing class, Paralandra.
Great.
It's very much.
So yes, we do like road trips. And if you have any tips, and when you're listening to this about Yellowstone or even New Mexico, specifically the national parks, I want to hear them.
Yeah, good deal. Speaking of raising kids.
Yeah.
Taking kids on road trips. We're talking about raising kids who love the church.
Yeah, we certainly are today. You, by the way, your transitions are so much better.
I'm trying. You know, you set me up well talking about taking your kids on the road. So raising kids who love the church, when I sent this topic out, you said, we already did raising kids who love Jesus.
Yeah.
And this is sort of a follow-up. I was envisioning this as a follow-up. Plus, I don't remember what we talked about with the raising kids who love Jesus. I imagine we are going to make some of the same points.
Yeah, I didn't quite catch the nuance. I was just like, Jared, we've done this. Why are you trying to repeat something?
Well, we're still facing, as far as I understand, a 70% dropout rate from kids who grow up in the church. And then they leave home in their young adult years, and they're not committing to the church at a rate of 70%.
That's huge.
Which is just gigantic. Yeah. And so the question comes, like, how do you raise kids who don't fall into that 70%, basically?
Man, there's a lot of things in there in terms of that. I think as an overarching thing, it's allowing kids to make it their own. So something I've seen quite a lot, just even about that drop off, is the second you're out of mom and dad's house, you know, you begin to test the boundaries. You begin to live life in the way you choose. I remember this when we went to university at 17. You know, you live on your own. You live with flatmates. You stay up later. You eat different foods. You go to different things. So there's loads of new things. And I think church falls into that category as well. You don't have to go to the same church as you've always been to. You don't have to go to the same type of service or the same type of church. You don't even have to go to church because you now make the choice. And I think if you leave church just purely, you do as I do because I say it to you, we're going to church, so you just have to come.
Yeah.
Like if you create that environment, what you're doing is you're raising kids to respect your choice, but not necessarily raising kids who love going to church. And so some form of ownership of going to church. So one of the things I was thinking about this is teaching your children that they are part of the body of Christ, and that as people in church suffer, so they do. If people in church are joyful, then so they are. And that includes having kids in that as well. So just one very simple example. In one of our churches, we had three teenagers that passed their driving test in the same month. And so we got them to stand up in church at the beginning of church and just gave them a round of applause. Just like, you know, be careful in the streets. They're out driving.
Right, yeah, right.
If they offer you a ride, say no. It's that kind of thing. But again, just bringing them, and that was a tiny, tiny little thing. But it made them feel really part of the family, really part of the body of Christ. Now, obviously, that was almost a non-spiritual example, but I think ownership of being part of the body of Christ rather than I just attend because my parents attend.
Yeah.
I think that will help that drop rate not be as severe.
I think you're right. I think helping kids as much as possible, especially as they enter the teenage years, but even before that, feel like they're not siloed.
Mm, absolutely.
I mean, there are benefits to age specific programs and, you know, student ministry and children ministry, that sort of thing. But opening up as many doors as possible for integration into the life of the church. One of the things that I really appreciated about Liberty Baptist is our girls from a younger age were, number one, once they entered teenage years, there was a youth class, but they could go, our church, you could go into any, what we call equipping groups, but it's, you know, Sunday school classes, basically. You can go to any Sunday school class. So like our girls were going to, you know, quote unquote, adult Sunday school classes because they weren't age. There wasn't like a class that this is just for the 30s and 40s and this is, you know, just for the 50s. And we have sort of a seminar format.
Yeah.
This is the class on, you know, Old Testament. And this is the class on parenting or what have you. And our girls could go. So one came with me to one class and another went with Becky to that class. And they felt like they were part of the class. They're learning alongside adults and they're all, you know, and all that that entails. Also, there are volunteer opportunities open to them, especially, you know, as members of the church in their teenage years, you know, volunteering in children's ministry, volunteering in the tech team and those sorts of things. They feel involved. They feel like they're a part of the church and not just a part of youth group or a part
100%.
Of. And they're very involved in youth group. It has nothing to do with, you know, not being involved there, but feeling like you're a part of the church and not feeling like the church is something just for kids, but something that is multi-generational.
Yeah.
I think it makes it stickier in some way.
Well, I visited a church recently for some pulpit supply and the greeter on the door was a granddad with his granddaughter and he opened the door and she gave you the bulletin and gave you the notices. And it was just a wonderful double act. And again, it was that, you know, this little girl's going to grow up in church feeling like it's hers as much as her granddad's, you know. I think attendance is really important. So I want to caveat this. This is not a guilt trip, but this is something that I think will help. If your attendance to church is spotty, especially in an age where you can watch a live stream, then in the future, your kids will have that view as well.
Right.
Because remember, as kids grow up, they're viewing their parents really up until their kind of teenage years as they know everything and what they do is the right way of doing it. So if they have grown up in a household where church is every week, not religiously, but genuinely a desire to do so, then that desire will feed into them. And so just an example, whenever we go on vacation as a family on these road trips, we will always say to the girls, okay, I'm going to look, see what church is here. Let's see where we can attend. And I'll read out the different churches to the kids and we'll say, we'll try going to this church. Let's see what it's like. The kids love that, you know, that idea of it's Sunday, where are we going for church? And I've even remembered some days where, you know, we've been sick or something's happened. We will try and do something at home. So we'll say, you know, unfortunately, we can't get to church today, but let's do something now. Let's watch some songs and sing along together. What we're training our kids to understand is that church is not just this thing that you do when you feel like it, that actually church is the people, the fellowship, the glorifying of God. And we want to do that. We desire to do that. And very little is going to stop us. Where I see the drop off quite a lot in, I mean, I'm even seeing it in college. We're at Christian college and seminary. There is a lot of students that'll just go, workload's quite a lot at the minute. I just didn't go to church this morning. And you just think, well, that didn't start here. That option, that thought process started somewhere else. And I just wonder if it's, as they grew up, was church, when it was inconvenient, you just didn't go.
Right. Well, that's very closely related to one of my notes, which is that your family life has to revolve around the church as your central community.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If the family of God really is the family of God, if you really are brothers and sisters, then this is your family above any other rival community. Doesn't mean that you can't participate in other social circles or, you know, anything like that, but it means the church takes priority. So you think of, you know, places where the church is not the central community. It's, you know, athletics. It's our kids are involved in youth sports. So that means for months out of the year, we're doing travel baseball or soccer because they do stuff on Sunday mornings. And well, our family revolves around that community.
Yeah.
And so church is just, as you said, when we have time or it's when, you know, it's just an option, but that's not our priority.
Yeah.
you know, I was, thinking of when we lived in Vermont, youth sports is not a huge deal. I mean, there's athletics, but in terms of like things, travel, baseball, yeah. weekend stuff, that's not as huge a deal. But there were still like community things, social things that would be scheduled during church stuff. And yeah. one particular, they would often schedule things, the school. And we were in a small town that had sort of a small school, and everyone's kind of—
You kind of have to go to all of it.
Yeah, yeah, you go to everything. It's a very community, small town. Hey, we're all in this together. Yeah. And that's very important. But they would schedule like, we're going to do the fundraising pancake breakfast on Sunday morning, whatever. And our girls would be sort of like, teachers would give them a hard time for not being at the thing. And they would, we'd have to explain to them like, okay, look, we love the school. We want to be involved in the school. But the church is our family, and the church is our primary social, community.
Yep.
We'll revolve around that. And if we're able to, step into any of these other environments, we will, but they all come second to the church. And I don't think this means that like you overbusy your family every time the church doors are open, you got to be there. This isn't about like overcomplicating your life, but it does mean that you prioritize the church, that the community of the church is the community that your family is devoted to and revolves around.
Couple of things just from that of thinking about community. Number one, how do you speak about that community?
Yeah.
What's the words you use? So again, this is something that I had to be really careful of when I was serving a church in a pastoral role, is being careful not to share gripes and grumbles about every little thing, because actually my kids are going to pick up on that. If I... gripe of, oh man, it was freezing in church again today. Why can't someone just put the heating on? Like my kids are going to hear that, and they are going to, by nature of just spending time around me, are going to carry some of that behavior on. Now, in the early days when they're kids at church, you can kind of like, oh, don't worry about that. I just had a blip today. I was a bit frustrated, or, haha, that's funny. But when they're getting older, they remember the fact that church is somewhere where there's always something that goes wrong.
Yeah.
So there's those words you've got to watch. But also on the flip side is then just like the physical nature of being together. How often are you actually spending time with the church? So there's one thing about attending. Then there's the other thing of your life and spending time together. If you speak ill of the church, you're not going to want to spend time with them. But if you speak well and genuinely love them, then you're thinking about, oh, who are we going to have for Sunday lunch? Shall we, we've got a Saturday night free. I wonder who can we go out for dinner with? Or, our girls love when we host multiple people at our house. And there was a Sunday night a couple of weeks ago where we said to the girls, oh, we're just going to have a quiet night this Sunday because it's been really busy. And you could see the disappointment in them that they weren't getting time with church families. We always have people around our house. Now, don't see this as a guilt trip. This isn't saying you must have people around. It's just the genuine question of when you go for coffee, who do you tend to go to coffee with? Mm. When you go for a walk, do you ever invite church members with you? When you're going to the theater to watch a movie, do you ever take church members with you? And I think it's just that you, to use the phrase, doing life together, you want to be around them.
Yeah.
Now, if kids see that, when they come 17, 18, 19, when they leave the house, what they're leaving then is a family, and they're going to crave that somewhere else. And they are either going to crave that in the world, or if you set that example, actually, the church is your family. They will love you, care for you. You will love them, care for them. They will quickly seek to find that in a new church.
Yeah.
So
that's so key. That's so key. And churches where really your only participation is to attend this event on a Sunday morning. And maybe your kids go to an event on, Wednesday night or something, but you're not actually in relationship with people, and your kids don't feel like they're a part of a social connection in the church. Like you said, you're not doing life together.
Yeah.
Then it's just, this is just a thing we're doing. And it can be very easily just a life stage thing, and not like, this is where my family is. This is the, just think of how important it was for my girls in particular, especially at a certain age, like junior high into early high school, especially in that time frame, to see college students, young adults, especially young women in their 20s, and to see them at church, they really looked up to them, and they, and when those girls would pay them attention, or talk to them or take them out for coffee. There was one dear lady, single lady, she's married now, but single lady at our church. She was a school teacher in Vermont, and she just befriended our older daughter, Macy. And Macy eventually had her for some classes when she went to her school, when she got old enough to go to the high school where she taught. But even before that, she would like, you know, take her out for coffee and they would, I mean, she like befriended her. And that was really special for Macy. They still keep up. Like, you know, Macy and her husband, when they travel through, they'll stay at this lady and her husband's home. And like that friendship has remained. But that was such a key moment. And then coming here, we moved to Kansas City and my girls there at Macy was going into high school. Grace was going into junior high. They had all of these, you know, 18, 19, 20 year old students in our church. And what they're seeing is, oh, like this isn't just, and they're here without families. Mm-hmm. They're here because they want to be here. And they talk to me and they'll, you know, they'll, you know, spend time with me. That was like hugely influential to them. And I think even beyond just mom and dad are taking you to church on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
They had connections, social connections, relational connections, and role models within the church.
Mom and dad, yes, are a role model, but they're not the role model that your children are really following. And we've shared this with students from our church that have come to our home. We always kind of say this, you know, do understand that we, you know, I don't do this in a kind of threatening way. I just do it in a really honest way. You know, I'm in charge of who comes into this home. And the reality is you guys are in our home because we've invited you, because you're our church family, you are believers in Christ, but you are also being an example to my children. So if that example is really bad, like you're not coming into our home because I'm going to guard my girls from seeing some of that. Now I'm for the sake of this being pretty bold and blunt here, but what I'm trying to say is the people that are around my girls are really important influences. And what I've found is that when I've shared that with our young people within the church, they're taking it really seriously. Do you know, they're checking in on our girls. They're even in their relationships, they're being honorable because they don't want to show a bad example. And again, it's that ownership over it. One of the things I think for a whole church, and so this is a not just a family raising kids, because I think ultimately the whole church plays a part in this, know each child's name. And this is a big thing for me. This is a struggle I had in a previous church. We had lots of kids. I'm used to preaching at the front. I'm used to kind of leading the church. I haven't really served in kids ministry because of that. And a family came and I shook everybody's hands. And Miriam was watching me and she said, "You don't know their names. You don't know the kids' names." And she was spot on. I didn't. To me, it was like a blur of kids. And I think that's the issue, is when we create kids and young people as a group and just label them that as that group. You know, imagine if we flipped the tables and just said older people of the church. You just know that that's going to cause a bit of friction because you're seeing them as a group by age rather than by name. See the children as individuals and know their names. And as I started doing that, man, the fun we would have high-fiving different people, even joking, you know, when you forget a name. So, you know, are you Steve? Are you Joe? Who are you? You know, kids really love that. And again, that comes so meaningful for adults to go, I see you. I'm so glad you're here. I want to celebrate what God's doing in your life, even at the age of 4, 5, 10, 15. You know, you are important to this church. Mm. If they leave the church thinking, no one really knows who I am, no one really cares that I just, you know, passed my exams, you know, that sort of stuff just leads them away from the church because it becomes hypocritical.
Yeah.
It's all about what you had to tell me rather than about you knowing me. So if you're listening to this, I really challenge you, you know, learn their names, not in some like a test situation where you're trying to tick it off, but each Sunday, you know, go up to family and say, hey, if you don't know who I am, you know, I'm Ross. What's your names? What's your names? There's a student here on campus, Mervin, great guy. He always forgets our kids' names, but it's now become a joke. You know, is Mervin going to be there? I wonder if he remembers our names. Let's test him on our middle names. It's a big thing for kids to recognize. So if I can encourage the entire church, don't just group people by age. See them as the individual that they are, which means they have a name. They have a personality. They have interests. Get to know that.
That's good. You mentioned that mom and dad can't be the only role models, but I do want to put a word in for how important it is, in particular for dad, to love the church, for dad to talk about the church like it matters, for dad to be eager to go to church. And this is a stereotype now, and probably, you know, we don't have any dads listening who would be in this category, but where dad is the one who kind of is like, mom's dragging him to church. He's kind of, we got to do this, kids. And the impression given to kids is that church is really a mom and kids thing, and dad's just kind of along for the ride. But dads have to lead in loving the church, speaking well about the church. And we even have some data. So I just want to share a little bit here. There's all kinds of sociological data on the importance of dads in the home, and especially on how kids perform later and how kids become well-adjusted or not well-adjusted. But this is specifically as it relates to church attendance into adulthood. This is Robbie Lowe writing in Touchstone magazine about a 1994 Swiss study. Lowe says, in short, if a father does not go to church, no matter how faithful his wife's devotions, only one child in 50 will become a regular worshiper. In other words, mom is taking the kids to church, dad doesn't go. Only one in 50 of those children will become a regular worshiper into adulthood. If a father does go regularly, regardless of the practice of the mother, in other words, dad is going, mom goes or maybe doesn't go, between 2/3 and 3/4 of their kids become churchgoers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just an astounding turn of events. Like mom doesn't go, but dad goes, and the impact is gigantic. If a father goes but irregularly to church, regardless of his wife's devotions, between 1/2 and 2/3 of their offspring will find themselves coming to church regularly or occasionally. A non-practicing mother with a regular father will see a minimum of 2/3 of those children ending up at church. In contrast, a non-practicing father with a regular mother will see 2/3 of their children never darken the church door. Wow. Now, this is not, you know, you could take this to say, well, just gosh, mom's influence is like nothing, which is not true. But it's just speaking to like the significance, how weighty a dad's influence is on their kids. And if dad is making church a priority, if dad is leading, not just in attending church, but in loving the church and committing to the church, if dad is helping the family to see graciously and humbly and in servant-hearted ways, is helping them to see that the church is the new humanity of God, it has a huge imprint upon how the kids see themselves into adulthood. And I think just in a larger picture, it speaks to how important dads are to the homes. Yeah.
Just when you're reading that, just the reality and the daunting reality of the impact that I can have in my girl's life. And it kind of comes back to that. You know, they're watching, they're learning from us. One of the thoughts that we haven't kind of touched on is when we make church too serious. So what we're kind of saying is we're elevating our attendance, our want, our desire. You know, we're trying to show how important it is. I think we can tip the scale sometimes too much. This is what Miriam and I were talking about the other night, is being too reverent, and that reverency leading into anger and frustration. So a few things on this. You have to wear certain clothes to church. And if you're not wearing those clothes, then you need to get yourself sorted out, and you must get your Sunday best on. You know, that kind of reverence that spill into formality. Often it's the case if your families, you're going to be running late for church. You know, how stressed and angst and angry are you as you're running late? And let's just face it, we all are when we're a family. Like, I've been through it many times where, you know, we've been late and I've turned up to church and immediately like, hey, everyone, you know, and you just know that that's not how you feel.
Right.
You know, just that, you know, when they're in church, kids are not allowed to have noise. They're not allowed to make mistakes. They have to take notes. They have to listen. You know, when you make it a kind of law-based, formal, because it's reverent, that's the right thing to do, because that's how God wants to see us. It's the second they have the opportunity to make decisions for themselves, which is ultimately when they leave the house, all of that's going to go away. All of that, mom and dad made me do this, that's all going to disappear. And suddenly they realize they have the freedom to choose what they want to do. And actually, that reverence isn't really that important to them because it was all based on this rule setting. So, for instance, in our household, we have very different personalities with our girls, which means they'll wear very different clothes. All the things we've said is, hey, if you can dress in such a way that you understand we're going to church and we're, you know, we're not going outside to kick a ball or going to a barbecue or whatever. At the same time, I really don't have a big deal if they do wear, you know, a chief's top or whatever to church. And I know for some people that that will be hard to accept because, you know, the best way to show reverence is to wear your Sunday best. I don't want to teach my girls that you have to wear certain things to please God, or you have to be there at certain times to please God, or you can only do certain things and that's the way you please God. Again, if we're elevating that we're a family seeking to glorify God, if that is elevated, then what decreases is the sense that you have to do certain things. And that's always a big fear for me. I don't want my girls growing up in a household thinking we have to do this because we have to go to church. I want them to think along the lines of, I get to do this because I get to go to church. It's just a very different thought. So just a warning against being a little too serious about it, tipping the scales a little bit too far the other way.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. If you make it sort of a restrictive, like, I mean, you communicate even poorer things about God and about grace. Mm-hmm. And it's not just even about impacting people's church attendance, but impacting our kids' understanding of who they need to be to even come close to God and relate to God. You've got to look a certain way and be a certain way for him to respond to you. And we want to be reverent. We want to be, you know, we want to revere God as holy, but he receives us as we are. Yeah. And there's a joy in that. You're speaking about clothes. One of our ministry resident families, Aaron and Grace, Trent, Grace was telling me the other night that little Margot, their child, during the service, Pastor Tyler was, I think, preaching, and, you know, Pastor Tyler, he dresses nice. He dresses
He's
nice for church.
He's a snazzy dresser.
He's a snazzy dresser. He was, I think, he was even wearing a suit. I'm not sure, but at least a tie. And Grace said that little Margot said, "Pastor Tyler looks nice." And, and Grace kind of nodded. And then Margot goes, "Not like Pastor Jared." And I think it was the Sunday before, after
was
I had
the green hoodie.
I was wearing a green hoodie in church, in the pulpit. I had my new, it was new. I thought it was snazzy. It was a new Adidas hoodie. I was pretty proud of that. And then later she said, I think like the next week or the week after, I was wearing like a navy cardigan sweater over like a button up shirt. And Margo said, "He looks nice today." So thank you, Margo, little Margo Trent, for keeping an eye out on Pastor Jared's
What he's wearing,
what I'm wearing, if it's appropriate or not.
I think that partly the reason I raise this is because I think this is more of an issue in the UK. Certainly my experience has been in the UK. I even remember situations where I didn't tend to wear a suit to preach or to lead anything, but I would wear one for funerals. And I would often get questions by church members saying, you know, you would wear one for a funeral. Why wouldn't you wear one on Sunday? Mm. And I would have to explain, I'm wearing it for respect for the family at a funeral.
Yeah.
And then they would challenge, "Well, do you not respect God?" And I was like, "Actually, I do respect God. And that's why I don't wear a suit every single Sunday, because he doesn't need me to wear a suit every Sunday. He's not going to smite me off the planet because I didn't wear a tie." And I think just the UK tends to be more formal generally.
Okay.
I guess we're more traditional when it comes to church.
Yeah.
And even just our aging members would be definitely more formal. It's just guarding from that. We want kids to be able to laugh about, you know, what they're wearing or whatever. And yes, hear me, there's then a tipping point the other way where you're so informal, no one really cares. But what I'm trying to say is, on the balance, if you're tipping one way or the other, don't go formal. Formal is going to be what will put children off.
That's good.
But I also have a daughter that loves to wear a dress every Sunday to church.
Yeah.
Fine. Cool. You know, it's just not making a big deal about it.
That's good. I think it's pretty good advice. I liked your mention of being careful complaining, in particular for pastors who carry particular weights as well. The way you and your wife speak about the church, make sure you're doing that in a way that's not too much in front of your kids, or the way that you talk about the church, the way you carry the church. If you're coming home and you're just exhausted and unengaged all Sunday afternoon, I mean, I know Sundays are just really hard. Mondays too, but if church is the thing that's keeping you from your kids or preventing you from engaging with your kids or making you complain about the church in front of the kids, they're soaking all that in.
Yeah.
And if you're having marriage difficulties, if you and your wife aren't communicating or you're having some tensions because of the church, your kid is soaking that in, and they may not be able to put all the, do all the math, but the impression that they're getting as they grow up is church is the thing that made my mom and dad,
upset,
irritable with each other, or church is the thing that kept my dad from spending time with me, or you know, those sorts of things, those communicate. So, yeah. you know, pay attention to those things as well. But in general, I, you know, there's no formula here. You know, the Lord, it's almost as if children have their own souls and their own minds and they're going to do whatever they want, which is true. There's no way to guarantee.
Yeah, you can do everything perfectly.
You can do everything and perfectly. And we all know stories of people who did everything, quote unquote, right. No one's perfect, but they did everything right. And their kids left the church. And we know stories of people who, like, they didn't, you know, give 2 cents about the church. And their kids ended up being very solid Christians. Yeah. And so, you know, there's that. But to the extent that they were able, we want to be influencing and shaping our kids to love the church. We want to raise kids who love the church. And so hopefully you found this podcast helpful in that regard. If you like the podcast generally, you find it helpful, please give us a good review. We are craving reviews. I'm like a whale out in the ocean, filtering the krill in through my gullet. I want reviews aplenty. I'm going to put another guilt trip on. Stop being a freeloader. Give us some 5-star reviews, and we'll probably read it on the podcast. Even if it's bad, even if it's a negative review, as long as it's entertaining, like don't be insulting or anything, but in general, if you like the podcast, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.